pandemic got us into a reflective space and made us look inward to see what we can do for the world at large. As a self-expression coach, I became a catalyst for women and started Vani, a one-on-one coaching program for women on finding their voice, to speak up, to be visible. As a storyteller, I spotted there were many ordinary people amongst us leading extraordinary lives, making a difference to the world, and they needed to be heard. Thus was born You and I with Rashmi Shetty, where amazing personal journeys with their uniqueness and individuality are showcased. A reaffirmation of the fact, open your eyes wider, the world is far more beautiful when we acknowledge the presence of both you and I. There are some people who you meet once who leave a deep impact on you. The man who conceived the idea of a common number all over India for the emergency ambulance service 108 is one such. I heard him speak a decade ago and have been inspired by his story. Ever since I have started this podcast, it has been a dream to have Dr. Sudhakar Varanasi as my guest. Today is therefore a special episode. Dr. Sudhakar had his education at IIT Kharagpur and obtained a PhD from the Indian Institute of Science, Bangalore. After 17 years at the Indian Institute of Science, he moved out to the corporate world and joined the IT wave in India way back in 1991. He was a founding director of Tiger Software and then moved on to Satyam Computer Services as part of the senior management. One of his major achievements in the social sector is the designing of the 108 Emergency Medical Services. He started EMRI, the Emergency Management Research Institute, in 2005, which pioneered large-scale deployment of emergency services for the first time in India under a public-private partnership model. Dr. Sudhakar then moved on to be the CEO at CoOptions Technologies to set up a statewide ICT platform across Andhra Pradesh to reach 3 million farmers and villages to bring about financial inclusion. He was also the chief mentor at Emergent Institute and the CEO at Namma Bengaluru Foundation, Bangalore. He currently mentors many individuals and organizations and challenges them to take on large social causes using innovation, technology, and the spirit of entrepreneurship. His fields of interest are education, healthcare, and financial inclusion. Listen in as Dr. Sudhakar shares amazing nuggets of life with a tinge of his trademark humor. A conversation where we cover his journey, the shifts, contentment in life, and joy. It's such a pleasure, Dr. Sudhakar Varanasi, to have you on You and I with Rashmi Shetty. I've been excited ever since you said yes to have this conversation. But before we get to the mentor, the speaker, and all that you have done in your life so far to the world, knowing you as the Dr. Sudhakar Varanasi, I'm curious to know, how was your childhood? Where was it? And what was your journey like?
First of all, thanks, Rashmi, for having me. It's good to be on a podcast where I'll get to speak a little bit about myself and my ideas and what I do. I'll be happy to do that. I'm generally shy of this kind of meetings, and I saw some of your other videos and I said, this is a good platform to be in. And it aligns anyway with what I want to do in the evening of my life, wanting to share some legacy of a good ideas with younger people in the next generation. So I'm happy to be here. What was Sudhakar like? Very mediocre, very ordinary. Like everybody else, I was a curious child. I grew up in a place called Bhimavaram in Andhra Pradesh. Fortunately, my parents allowed me to explore my curiosity, didn't put much pressure on me, except they made it clear that if we don't study well, Then we'll have to face the music because his parents are not going to leave any money behind for us. There isn't any money to leave behind for us. I think that's a good lesson for me. And this is the lesson that I teach many parents. Don't make it too easy for your kids. Don't make it tough for them. Let them explore. Paint the scenarios, what happens if you study well or if you do well in sports or if you do well in anything like dance, music, whatever they choose to do. As long as they're excelling, they have a good possibility of doing very well in life. But if you give them too much money, they will, their comfort zone is what they will be seeking all their life and they take shortcuts. All my brothers and I, my family, all of us siblings grew up as a close family, close-knit family, primarily because father left no money with us. And there is no money, what is there to fight about? Okay, so good. And I intend to apply this logic to my own boys. So that's how the story is, was my for my childhood. Somewhere around ninth standard, if I recall well, I became a little more confident about my own learning abilities. I also wanted to do well. Until that time, I was just playing around the trees and balls and cricket game and so on. But somewhere in ninth standard, the puberty time, I guess, some hormonal imbalance kicked in and I wanted to study well. I wanted to do well. And I'm sure everybody wants to do well. But I figured out some techniques of doing well in the exam, like studying consistently and remembering a few things often. And so I started doing well in the exams. Nothing special about it. There are so many people who do well. But I would say, if I have to look back, and I was saying this in a meeting recently, the one thing that I learned in school is the confidence that I can go and learn anything. That is the primarily most important thing that our children should learn. The world is there for you to learn. You can solve any problem. You have to find out how to find the answers to your questions. So get clarity on your questions, ask the right questions, and find the answers to it. If that is allowed to happen, and after a few misfires here and there, we will learn how to learn, how to become confident. So I changed my career several times. I'll tell you about that later. But I had no problem in my ability to learn. Let's see what happens. Why can't we learn? Kind of attitude. I think the first initial roots of this took place when I was young. And then I started well. I did well in school. Probably, I think I topped the state list and then moved to IIT Kharagpur. And then the struggle as a teenager started learning. I had to learn English in IIT Kharagpur. Not that my English was bad at school, but it was a subject that I learned. But the subjects were, all the courses were in Telugu medium. So I picked up English. Again, no, it's okay. If we don't know English, we'll pick it up. That's the kind of attitude. My English knowledge was good, but my spoken English wasn't good. But over a period of time, I learned. Today, I'm comfortable with English, let's say. Once that fear of learning goes away, and the joy of learning kicks in, the confidence kicks in, then your curiosity takes you to various parts of life, various dimensions of life. So I moved in academics. I moved from academics to corporate with life without any background in business management. Then I figured it out. I became a CEO a couple of times. Then I moved to socially meaningful projects again. And that was a very different game. Nobody cared whether I was a CEO or a PhD or anything else, but they just wanted to know if I can produce some socially impactful results for them. In the corporate world, nobody cared whether I was a PhD or something else, as long as I got the money revenues for them. In the academic world, people didn't care who I was, as long as I produced some good research output or got good students. So it is very different, and leaping across the boundaries of these very different fields was possible only because I believe that I had that confidence somehow instilled in me by my teachers, by my parents, my siblings, and possibly by my own internal attitude after some exploration. So that's how childhood was, no different from any ordinary person.
So when you look back at this amazing, beautiful journey of curiosity that you've been going between boundaries this way and that, the corporate world and the academic world, and how beautifully you've balanced the two. Any idea, sir, looking back now, what helped you maintain your balance in both of this? Because like you said, in one world, it was all about the money that was coming in. In the other world, it was about the students you were producing. How did you balance your life in both of these? What did you have right?
Yeah, it's easier to hindsight to answer that question. But at that time, it's not so clear. We were exploring. But the fear of exploration was not there. We'll see what happens. This is what's called growth mindset. Growth mindset is we don't know the answers, but we'll figure it out. That's an attitude which says we're not afraid to learn. Okay, we're not afraid to figure it out. And why? If you ask me, how did you do this? How do you do? What do you know about this? My answer is not yet. I don't know it, but I'll figure it out. Same thing happened with many of my ventures. How did one get that, or what are the clues for it? I would say it's somewhere along I realized in, I think, my IIT days, IIT Kharagpur days, that one has to get clarity on what one is seeking to know or seeking to do or seeking to accomplish. Most of the time, I'm getting to the philosophy here, there's no clarity in many students. They have some idea. We want to do well. Well is a very loose thing. In what? And how do you want to do that? You don't have clarity. So how do you go about it? What is the right attitude to go about it? For instance, you know, I'll tell you about some of the lack of clarity that seems to occur to a lot of students these days, and possibly in my days too. My generation is no exception. I think every generation goes through this. We imbibe a number of values or guidelines on our growth path, and that are somewhat contradictory, and we don't resolve them. So it becomes like going in a car where all the wheels are going in different directions or pulling in different directions. We don't have clarity of what to apply where. As I often tell my mentees, now that I do a lot of mentoring, things like, should I be content? Should I be not content? Should I be humble or should I be aggressive, confident and assertive? Or should I be humble? It took me some time to figure out a number of contradictions in the way we look. And if we don't resolve these consciously, the unconscious mind pulls you into, makes you waver this way and that way. You don't know what is the right thing to do. I can give you a couple of examples. Let's say contentment versus not contentment. If I ask an average student or in a class sometimes, and I go to high schools and colleges and give this talk and ask them, is contentment good? They say sometimes yes, sometimes no. So I said, when is it good and when is it not good? There's no clarity. Most people don't have. They are right. It's good sometimes and it's not. But if we want to guide the younger generation or guide ourselves, we need to get clarity on this. When is it good? When is it not good? So I had come to the conclusion in my mid-20s that contentment with what universe gives you or God gives you or nature gives you is a good thing. Contentment with your effort is not a good thing. If I'm getting, let's say, 50% in maths, if I'm content with it, yes, I'll pass. But that's not a good thing. I should try for excellence in mathematics. So the moment I take an attitude that it's okay, chalega, this much I've got, that's good enough for me. That's not a good thing, especially in an area where you want to excel and do well. If you don't care for mathematics, it's okay. But if it is important for you to do well in maths as a part of your career ambition, or to get through a good examination like IIT entrance or whatever examination, you have to do well. You can't be content with some small test that you have taken and do well. So that's kind of thing. But the other side of the equation is contentment with what you cannot change and what is not in your control is not a good thing. And most people apply this contentment rule in the wrong place. They complain about things on which they have no control. I remember one of my managers in the software industry told me that he was very unhappy because he didn't get selected for a New Zealand project. And I remember asking him, so what's the problem? And they said, I'm eligible for that project, but somebody else was chosen. There's no freedom in this company, so I want to resign. I said, gentlemen, if you want to resign, by all means, it's fine. But now that you come to me to tell me the problem, I must tell you, how much of freedom do we have in this world? Do we choose our parents? Do we choose our gender? Do we choose our siblings? Do we choose the country in which we are born in? Or the languages that our family speaks? We have no control in any of these things. And these are all, do we teach to choose our teachers or the school we go to in the early stages? No, we just do what is given to us. So we accept that there is no freedom in all aspects of our life. But there is a freedom in your choices, what you pay attention to, what you want to do in life, and how you want to do it. There's certain freedoms. Let's exercise freedom in what you can do, what is in your control, and let's not worry about the things that are not in your control. I remember one guy is telling me, one of my student friends, my student is, I wish I was born in Switzerland. I don't have to, but it'd be a rich country and I would have no problem with a great job and a great life. I said, no, can you change anything? You can't. So you might as well accept it that this is not something it's to worry about or to aspire about. Let's see what can be done. Maybe you can go there very well as a senior scientist or engineer and do a great job. That is in your control. But you can't change the country of your birth. That's done already. You're already born. So, but you might think it's ridiculous how the way, but it is, that's how people are. They worry about things they can't change. It's like complaining about weather. There's very little you can do about weather. You can change your room temperature maybe, but you can't control the weather. So why waste our precious energy worrying about things in which we have no control and worrying and not doing things that we ought to be doing? It's a very inefficient system somehow we get used to because of lack of clarity. So if I question myself and say, why am I worried? Is it something I can do about something about? Or is it not something I can do about? So if it's not, there's nothing to worry about. If it is something that I can do, what am I doing about it? What can I do about it? What can I do intelligently about it? What can I do optimally about it? That is what your human mind should be occupied with. But unfortunately, most of the time, it is occupied with absolute garbage of worry about things that you can't control. I see several people worrying about politics, and they don't do any damn thing about politics, improving the politics. But they would love to worry, talk about, oh, how bad the politicians are. Yeah. What are you doing about it? If you want bothering you, do it. Do something about it. Or else don't do. Don't complain. Get on with your life. Enjoy this zone. Life is the only coin you have. Spend it wisely.
Now, when you speak that, it makes sense. You've seen so much of life yourself and therefore the maturity to understand it's all the now that we have control over makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
But this little boy from Bhimavaram who had gone into IIT Kharagpur, how did he understand and get the clarity so early on? Because at that age, from that small town, you've gone into an IIT and your world is completely different now. You have challenges like English, which you have to write your answers in. But how did you get clarity so early on?
Now, the answer is I didn't get clarity early on. But life is a great teacher, Rashmi. If only we were a little willing to listen to the lessons of life. So there were many times I fell down in the path and then reflected on it and said, of course, we complained my destiny, complained this and that, the weather and, various things that you easily have access to complain about. But at the end of it, you realize that you're not going to get anywhere there. So even in startups, I often tell people, fail often, fail early. It's okay to fail. There's a couple of knocks ahead, a couple of problems ahead. And if you agree to watch the world carefully with an unbiased look, you can learn lessons from many others' mistakes also. And my own mistakes I could learn. So between that and my interest in literature, and occasionally some small things that people say, if you're sensitive, it goes to your heart and say, yeah, this makes sense. And that kind of thing happened, like everybody else, a few times. And then I decided to be a little more careful and not to fall for these little traps, which are wastes of energy, and go on to it, like everybody else. But literature, I would say, helped me quite a few times go back. And it's like a good song or a good novel or a good Shakespearean comments or quotes that will make you look at life and say, okay, this is the best way to go about it. Every failure is a stepping stone for success. So life has only two things. I remember somebody telling me this. Either you succeed and enjoy life, or you fail and learn. Both are good. Learning is good. Enjoying success is good. But if you say one is a success, the other is a failure, then one looks like a good thing, the other looks like a bad thing. It is not. Failure every time is actually nature's way of telling us what we need to do. There's a learning, there's a teacher, there's a guru in every falling down. If nothing else, we should tell our children not to be afraid of failing, not to be afraid of looking like a jackass before everybody for a little while. But we become real jackasses only if we don't learn from the mistakes that have happened. World is an extraordinary opportunity, especially in the early years, to learn a lot of things, to get clarity in what should be pursued. Because when we are born, we're not born with a manual on how to manage ourselves. We have to figure it out. So what works for us? What is it that we want? Sometimes we want something, go after it, and then realize there's no big deal, there's no point. Let's go for the bigger things. Sometimes we're lucky and get on to the bigger things right in the beginning. So one has to play by the ear and look at that equanimity of taking success and failure in a nice way comes if you just give yourself enough space, enough time for reflection, it'll come. But sometimes we are so full of ourselves that we think we know, and we know that we don't know, but we pretend like we know. So we go through all that phase. I'm no exception. I went through the same things. Some of the knocks have been very good for me. Some of them have been very timely. If you fail later in life, it's difficult to recover. But early on, you can easily pick up momentum and go. So that's my long answer to your short question.
But then moving on from IIT, what plans did life have for you? And how much more clearer was your path to you? Because I'm sure when you stepped out of IIT, there were a lot of options before you. What did you choose and how did you go?
Okay, I chose to make a very unconventional move to Indian Institute of Science after IIT 5 years. In the final year of my stay there, somebody asked me a question. He was a bright student himself. And he said, hey, Newton saw the apple fall down and said, there must be a force pulling it down. Otherwise, why would anything fall down to the ground every time we leave it up in the air? So there's a force, invisible force. And what should be, and he explored that and came up with a formula, force equal to m1 m2 by r squared times a constant, gravitational constant. That seemed to explain the planetary motion and anything falling to the ground with a certain force. That's wonderful. But the point is, how come Newton did not notice that the apple tree itself is going against the gravity, is growing? The billions of trees are growing against the gravity every day. Water is being pumped up from the ground without an electrical motor to the highest leaves in the plant. How is that he missed that point altogether? What is the force pulling that water up to there? That looked like a stupendous question to me. It stumped me. And I thought I had known, understood how these physical forces work and how to write equations governing the motion of various dynamics. Then after some exploration, it became clear that the biological forces are far more complex than physical systems and chemical systems. They have higher level of intelligence because they are a lot more organized complex systems. So that looked like a very good, interesting challenge to take up. So I made some inquiries and they said the Institute of Science has a very good department on molecular biophysics or biophysics. And somebody called Professor G.N. Ramachandran is a FRS fellow of Royal Society and is working there. So I applied. He interviewed me and gave me a PhD seat right away. And I took that difficult, unplanned step towards a new exciting area. Life took its turn and that's how it happened. So I don't plan too much. And I often tell young people, don't plan at the minutest detail. Have an aspiration to do well in whatever direction. But specifics, you don't know what will happen. So, for instance, if you set out to have $1 million, then you might or might not achieve it. The problem with setting short-term goals is, if you don't achieve it, you will be depressed. If you achieve it, you become arrogant. And why these unnecessary things? Why not say, I'll make as much money as I can? I want to make money, as much money as I can. Who knows what your circumstance? If you set out to be a millionaire and maybe you'll have an opportunity to be a billionaire, why restrict yourself to a million? So why put small goals? Why not aspire, aspiring to do well in anything that you do? This brings me to that. The one thing that I often tell people and myself, if you want to be successful, don't chase success. Chase excellence in anything that you do. If you're a painter, try to be the best outstanding painter around. If you are a dancer, do the same thing. If you are a scientist, if you are an engineer, if you are an AI researcher, put the effort in, not in the outcome, but in the effort that you put in. But pay attention to what you need to do to get there, because the journey is more important. And the journey becomes a lot more smooth if you are not complicated by your thoughts of success and your fears of failure. Why all these things? What will you do with $1 million? We'll worry about it later. But throughout your journey to get to that place, if you keep wondering about $1 million, your attention is not on $1 million path. You are in the worrying about the destination. So you won't traverse well. The planning and moving requires a lot of planning in life. And that, therefore, is more important. So it's a Bhagavad Gita statement, karmanye vati karaste. Once you set your goal, leave it there. Your entire attention should be on how to improve your quality of your effort. If you do that, wherever it lands you, it's damn good, because you are enjoying learning of that. And it's not all that difficult to remind ourselves of this. So, and the others also, as we grow older, we have a responsibility to the next generation. We want to leave a legacy of good thinking in the minds of younger people who are seeking. You have to leave them in little snippets like this. Don't chase success, but if you want to be successful, chase excellence. And also I realized that life has two phases. One is survival, the other is growth. In survival mode, certain things, you are very competitive, you have to be aggressive, you have to be assertive, and this and that. It's like sports. When you are running a 100-meter dash, you just want to be better than anybody else in the team. But when you take up sports like cricket and so on, it is collaboration that's important, not only competitiveness. The way you move from competitiveness in your survival phase to collaboration is sometimes leaves people with a few contradictions. They don't know how to resolve those things. And if they can, I'll tell you where the problem comes. People are often told, as children, we were told to be taking care of ourselves first. So the question that comes is, in a teamwork, you're not taking care of yourself. You're trying to make the whole team win. So what happens to your desire to excel personally? So you have to merge that closely with the teamwork. While you are excelling in whatever you do, bowling or batting or fielding or whatever you're doing, you also have to make sure that the team wins. This is where systems theory comes in. There are lots of ideas there. Each of them, as I was studying, I was a student and I understood that, for instance, for the system to be performing at optimal level, your subsystems may have to be suboptimal level. For instance, in a marriage, husband cannot say, I want maximum happiness, that's why I'm marrying. The happiness that an institution of a marriage gives comes from you optimally working. If necessary, you have to be suboptimal, for the whole system to be optimal and you get the benefits of an optimal family. That is very often lost in people. People say, I'm in this company because I want to earn a lot of money. Yes, if you want to earn a lot of money with the strength of a team behind you, you have to contribute a lot of things to the team. It's only then that system flourishes and it grows in a very healthy way. And then you get the benefits of a system that grows very well. We're seeing that nowadays in India. We're all benefiting from a national growth. And that's possible because there are many people working hard. The people, soldiers at the front level, engineers at the factory level, teachers at the school level. We all have to work hard to create a great system. Then we all benefit from that. So we can't say that my happiness has to be optimized above all. No. So these are things that you learn when you are in the growth phase of your life. There are lots of systems learning that one goes through. We can discuss that some other time if you want. Yeah, this is, again, a long answer to your question. Yeah, I hope it was useful.
It was, because Carol Dweck definitely spoke about the growth mindset and yes. How it is. And that's what I see has been guiding you through and through.
Yes.
But for somebody who's done a PhD from Indian Institute of Science, what would have been but a natural path is to remain an academician and stay there teaching. What drew you back to the corporate world after your PhD? And thereon, your journey has been very different. So sure. How did that switch happen?
Yeah, sure. My parents gave me enormous freedom to do what I wanted to do. But four of my brothers were in the United States already by the time, because the economic situation in India was poor at that time. There were much better jobs in the United States. They went there. So I wanted to be a little close to I was the youngest in the brood. So I wanted to be with my parents. So I decided to stay back in India. They didn't ever tell me to stay back. Their ways of kind of taking care of themselves. But I felt I should, a bit of idealism and a bit of... I'm reasonably well-educated and I can always find a job here, satisfying job. So if I don't get it, I'll say go abroad. So I tried to look at there are not too many jobs in the biophysics area where I specialized in India. So I looked at the skills that I have, and one of them was computers. I did a lot of computer modeling at the time of my PhD. So from there, I went to... It was obvious to look at the IT sector in the country that was beginning to happen, very early stages. Nobody saw the big wave. But I felt there is a big possibility India would do well because it doesn't require a lot of engineering skills. You know, we can easily write software for let's say, banking application, insurance application, or healthcare application. What's a big deal of writing little database applications? So I thought India would do well. So I managed to get a good job there. Because I had gray hair, I was in the senior management. There was nobody else in the country who knew how to write software, and not too many people at that time. And then it was easy passage for me. And of course, I knew I was a little more sensitive to customer requirements and understanding what the business is about. So I did well in the corporate sector. Eventually, I became a CEO and so on. You have to be like Carol Dweck's thing. You figure out dynamic. Life is dynamic. You never know what happens in a war situation or in an unexpected catastrophe. So you, instead of saying, this is what I want to be, I'm saying, we'll do well in any area that we're essentially problem solvers, Rashmi. If we can train ourselves to problem solver, if there's an emotional problem, we'll solve it. If there is a relationship problem, we'll solve it. If there's a financial problem, we'll solve it. If there's a health problem, we'll solve it. So if you take that attitude and keep your expectations low, but vision high, I'm sure wonderful things will happen.
And when you say vision as high and your ambitions low, how do you match both?
Expectations are always about my effort. I keep my expectations very high. Vision is high. There's a difference between ambition and vision. Let me explain this as I often explain to my colleagues in software industry. Vision is when you want something outstanding, big for the whole community, for everybody. Ambition is usually personal. I want to be a millionaire. I want to be a minister. I want to be this, I want to be that. So, but when you expand that I to include everybody, that becomes a vision. What Abdul Kalam ji had was a vision for the whole country. He wanted India to do well in 20 different fields. In his 2020 document, he clarified that beautifully. He wanted education for the country, in the entire country. He wanted financial growth. He wanted healthcare sector to grow. He wanted politics to grow, leadership to grow. Several dimensions he planned. That is vision. When you say, I want a house in New York or London, it's me all the time, then you realize that it's ambition. And when it's ambition, sometimes it works, but sometimes it doesn't. When it doesn't, it's painful. When it does, it is no less painful. It takes you from one ambition to another. Then you become greedy. You then become very uncomfortable with the success. Not many people know how to deal with success, especially ambition-related success. But vision-related success is just wonderful because everybody is happy with it. My father was given to very little proselytizing or giving advice, but he gave me one statement which I remember in my school, which I thought was just nice play with words. He said, when you replace the word I with the word we, the word illness becomes the word wellness. It looked like a nice play of words. As a school-going kid, it was nice. He read it somewhere and asked me to take a look at it. But later on, I studied neuroscience and went a little deeper into mind part of it. Today, I know that when I worry not about myself, but everybody else around me, so that when everybody grows, I also grow. But it's a very healthy growth that leads to well-being. A lot of our health problems related to our mind, and they're all connected with that simple thing. Think bigger about everybody, not yourself. In fact, if I may say so, the first time I got some clarity on some of the most beautiful values that we need to have. So I looked at definitions I read somewhere that humility is not when you think less of yourself. Humility is when you think about yourself less and think more about the others. When you think less of yourself, it is not humility. It is low self-esteem, which is not a good thing. So when you think of yourself less of the time and think more about others, can I worry about my colleagues in the office? Can I worry about the country at large, the community at large, my family at large, rather than me and my money, my bank account, my promotion, my vacation, and so on? That is, you know, makes that shift, which is not easy when you are very young. But as you grow older from that survival phase to growth phase of your life, if you can make that transition, it's beautiful. Then you begin to see the beauty of life like nothing else before. That's what happened to me anyway.
And talking about that vision, moving beyond the self, I remember a decade ago when I met you for the first time, the beautiful, inspiring speech that you gave about 108. I have lost count of the number of times I've shared that story, but I would want to hear it once again from you about this concept of 108, which you brought into our country. And today we've just taken it for granted, which has become so much a part of our system. So if you can take us through that story, your style.
I was blessed to have that opportunity, but I guess it came my way, not by luck alone, but because I was wanting to do some useful things in life. See, what happened was when I was about 50 years old, I looked at back at my life, as I occasionally do, and took stock of the situation and said, I've done educationally well, IIT and IISc, two of the best top class institutions inside India. I've done well financially. I was in the IT sector at the right time. The growth was happening. A tsunami wave was happening in the IT sector, and I happened to be a part of it. I did well. I did well professionally. I became a CEO, financially because of stock options and so on. But have I done real good service and built anything substantial in this country apart from some good bank account and IT structures in India? The answer was no. I didn't do anything like service that my brothers who were doctors were doing. So I was thinking of that. In a couple of months later, a friend of mine by name Barbara died in a road accident. She's a good family friend. She died when she was traveling with her 21-year-old daughter. And I was not in the country when it happened, but when I came to know, I was extremely unhappy. Then I realized, and I was looking at myself and said, what's the point in getting unhappy and criticizing the government, the traffic in India, police in India, hospitals in India, lack of ambulance system in India, and talking about it to everybody in my family or in my neighborhood or in my workplace? It's not getting me anywhere, not solving the problem. So if we want to be efficient, anything that bothers you should do something about it or not be bothered about it. It's okay. Like bad weather, you know, no point in complaining about it because there's nothing you can do about that. Okay. You can't raise the temperature of the ocean. You can take a glass of water and boil it. You can't boil the ocean. There are many things that you can't do, but there are things that you can do. And if you can't do anything about it, don't complain. If you complain, do something about it. So that was the thing that I used to say in various situations. And when this happened to me, I wanted to apply the same yardstick and said, then the first thought was, it's not something any individual can do. It's not even governments can do. It's not the whole complex central government, state government. Everything has to change to make it happen. I said, no, that's a good excuse for not doing anything about it. So let's find out ways of making it happen. If this problem is given to you, what would you do? So that's how it started. I took a week off, looked at the whole problem, talked to some of my friends in the government, and realize that it's not something, government has so many other priorities. It's unlikely that they will think about this as one more priority because so many things are need attention in this country. So many things are wrong. So where do you start? So this is not in the priority of the government. How do you make the government accept it? So I started, okay, there's a problem. Let's see how we can make that happen. That's one thing led to another. Then that story is a very complex story. But there have been a lot of beautiful lessons to learn. As long as you have the Carol Dweck's mindset, a growth mindset, you'll always figure it out. We have no answers to all the questions. As I often say, we are not GMUs, general managers of the universe. We're just humble, ordinary people capable of problem solving in small domains. So let's see if there's techniques apply in larger domains also. It's worth attempting. Failure is not a problem. Okay, you attempted something, it doesn't work, it's okay, it's one more thing. But not doing it was not okay. When it happened in my radar with a good friend that we all liked, my wife and I were very friendly with her, family knew her very well. And when it happened, it went home. And I said, there's some reason why it happened. Let's see if I can do. I'm at the prime of my life, done well. If I don't take risks at this stage, who will take? My friend suggested that I should do it after retirement. And I said, no, this is not the kind of thing I want to do when I have no juice left in me to pursue. But when I'm in the prime of my life, when I'm not so insecure having to worry about my rent next month and things like that, this is the time to do some good things. So that's how it happened. But I was blessed to have that opportunity and was able to get some funds to start with it and then start the project. And then government got interested for whatever reasons. It moved forward. That's a very long story, but it happened beautifully. And there are some lessons to be learned from that. And I try to apply that, to talk about that and give those lessons to other projects. And this is not the only problem. There's massive problems in India. India is a big country. Problems are big. So the solutions ought to be big. If the solutions have to be big, there are two major methods. One is technology. Use technology very well because technology scales up beautifully. If you have to do manual systems, it will be very difficult to scale up. Second thing is entrepreneurial. For entrepreneurs, problems are not problems. They're opportunities to make money, to do something outstanding. So that's how this whole thing happened. So we're applying it now to other larger causes that need attention in India. So I tell my friends, the younger friends, that if you want to do outstanding things, you have to pick up some outstanding problem and take a chance. And if you it works out, it's wonderful. If it not, it's a great satisfaction that you tried anyway. Maybe you're ahead of time. Maybe universe didn't support you. But it just trying itself is a pleasure. To say that I've tried to solve this fundamental problem in a big way is a great, as long as we learn to pat ourselves on the back for the attempt and not for the success alone, the country, the mankind, not just this country, will be in a much better place. You have to have the courage to go after big problems, because you can't have big problems on this planet and have small solutions. If I take care of my maidservant son's education and feel damn good about it, just a drop in the ocean. There are millions of maidservants whose children have to get education and there's no money for them. So how do we solve this problem? So this is how I started looking at it.
It's such a beautiful story, sir, of how you took the initiative as an individual to move ahead, to create a movement for something that today everyone in India takes for granted. When they need an ambulance or an emergency, it's 108 that you dial. So when you look back on that journey, I want to take you back to that first initial part of the conversation where you spoke about contentment. Are you today a content? So are you today somebody who is completely contented with the way life has opened up for you, thrown opportunities, and the way you have picked them up and made the most of them?
I have to answer that carefully now, because my own definition of contentment, I am content with what has happened, but not with my effort. This effort will have, as a friend of mine once told me, I wasn't willing to talk about this 108 story. Then he said, "What's wrong with you, Sudhakar? This is a story that needs to be told to inspire the younger people, to inspire all those who want to do great things and don't have the confidence to do it, that they don't know that it can be done. So you have to talk about it." So my contentment comes. I've decided not to be content about my part of it. I will continue to do this. But in terms of the joy of having achieved some results there, I can tell you it's an extraordinarily blissful state of mind. It is out of that state of mind that I started wanting to give back to the society in a much more systematic way. I can somehow stumble into 108 thing at a comfortable time when I had the knowledge of learning, systems and processes, I could take risk at that time. But can we do it systematically to many other areas? Give confidence to other people that we have to figure out solution to big problems. Otherwise, we're condemned to go through a lot of suffering. So I'm looking at what is this state of mind which makes us possible to explore these things with a true attitude of excellence, chasing excellence, looking at the much bigger outcomes than our personal aggrandizement, personal growth, and so on. Could go beyond that, see some success quickly and go beyond that and see if we can do something outstanding. I think that is the one thing that gives you, if there's something called bliss, it comes close to that. And I'm saying that very responsibly, because I have clarity in now understanding what is happiness at the physical level, what's happiness at the mind level, what's happiness at the spiritual level. This particular activity of mine, 108 success, has given me that spiritual bliss, spiritual happiness. You know, it's more than words can explain it. It's not contentment. I'm decided that I keep on doing these things until there is life in me, until I have the ability to do it. Whether people appreciate it or not, that's why I'm mentoring more than 100 people. That's life is going on so beautifully. But it's this project and a few other things have given me that enormous satisfaction of doing something more than my personal growth, contributing to the, it's like pleasure of taking versus joy of giving. That joy is certainly there. Contentment, no.
Okay, you've left me completely overwhelmed at this point, where if I metaphorically bring before you a youngster who's just finished college, say in his early 20s, and who comes to you for advice to say, how do I move now on with life? What would you tell him apart from seeking excellence and this joy of giving? Is there something specifically you'll tell him to pursue in order to get a life that is very contented?
Wonderful question. So in the first phase, if it is just a college student out of college and wanting big things and that enthusiasm, energy are there, I would often say, get clarity on what you want to do. Very often, we don't have that clarity. We crucially want to be something useful. There is place for it, but that's when you are in school. But by the time you are college, you should have clarity in what you want to do. You may not stick to it all your life, but at least for the next 10 years, let's say, what do you want to do? Pursue something that allows you to reach your mind's goals. So get clarity on goals. What do you want to do? What would make you happy? Then how do you figure out how to get there? It comes if you're just you get into a self-reflective mode, you will be able to get that. And even if they don't get it in the first few steps, they'll get it by that practice alone is extraordinary. Then the second thing is, I would say, keep a good company of wise people who have trodden that path, or who's sharing of some tips to you, some essential insights to you, will help you grow in a much more healthy way. The Japanese say there are two ways of growing in life. One is through difficulties. Life hits you hard and you learn. The other is through insights. Kensho versus Satori. Satori is when you get an insight and say, yeah, this is it. So today I know that from I to we is a good transition, because your neurochemicals that are produced in the brain are very different when you only worry about I. You have serotonin and oxytocin produced in the brain. So if somebody can give you a little guidance, seek that. So in the question, and there's a beautiful saying read somewhere that when somebody asks you what is important, the journey or the destination, you say it's the company. Journey is important, not more than the destination. But journey to be useful and meaningful, you have to have a good company. There we often have choice. Yeah, we can choose our company. We can choose to do this journey of life with wonderful people, people who are more knowledgeable than us, who have something to share as an insight into it. So choose. And so since I'm in the last stages, evening of my life, let's say, so I'm asking myself, how can I be a better mentor for those who are seeking? So in the Indian context, I've decided three rules for myself. One, I don't give advice unless I'm asked. Because a lot of people give advice and younger people don't seem to want it at some stage of their life. So I give it when it's asked, genuinely. If I have time, I'll certainly be happy to give advice. Three, if I give advice and if it's not followed, I don't lose my sleep over it. It's after all, I've given advice and not orders. For them to figure out what it is. I want to be available to fun. I've seen some outstanding students really seeking. And if you know how to do the right bit of advice at the right time, it's an art and a bit of luck. Then lives can turn around and do extraordinary things. That's where your interviews like this, conversations like this, can help and reach many more people who might be needing advice, some guidance, or seeking good. As Christ says, seek and you shall find. Wisdom has to be sought. But when it's sought, are we, older generation, providing it is what I worry about these days. I think we're not doing enough, and I think we should do a little more dispassionately, a little more smartly. We give advice when they don't want it. Why not give it to people who are seeking it? How do you know who's seeking it? These are the things that I'm preoccupied with. So if anybody comes to me at that age with sincerity, I'll guide them on a few principles. Those insights are more important.
Beautiful, sir. And the last two questions as we move to the end of the conversation. The first question, the pandemic was something that shook the whole world and gave us a lot to ruminate on. So what were your reflections from the pandemic?
It takes time, but my reflection is follow anti-fragility concepts. India has done extremely well under Juris. All biological systems have anti-fragility into it, built into it. Anti-fragility systems are systems where you go through a crisis and you come out much stronger than before the crisis hit you. So in other words, there was a learning component. You become stronger as a result of the crisis. If we develop that anti-fragility, India seems to have developed it. We not only did financially and health-wise, and we jumped up several notches in the world's ratings in so many ways, not just financially. As I review the COVID, these are the best times we had. Yes, it was a big shock. I mean, I lost some friends. But the thing about anti-fragility is it teaches us that any problem that doesn't kill us will make us stronger. And any problem that kills us makes everybody else around us stronger. So it's okay. We'll take anything that happens positively and become stronger or make the world stronger after you leave. Either way, it's good. Part of evolution.
Yeah.
Okay, those are my thoughts about COVID.
Okay. And three life lessons that you'd like to leave us with?
Chasing excellence as a way of life, not chasing success. Fulfillment is more important than success. So chase excellence for fulfillment. That's first lesson. Energy to learn, enthusiasm to learn is a great attitude to have. I wish I had more of it, but whatever time I have left, I want to do that the rest of my life. Either I become enthusiastic about learning. Now I'm doing something in AI, hopefully something very nice. But we don't know. I may, we don't know. I often say that we know often how much money we have, approximately or precisely we know how much money we have, but we don't know how much time we have. So in the absence of it, evolve strategies to deal with any amount of time. Maybe tomorrow we'll go with COVID or without COVID or whatever. Anything is possible. But then you have to optimize every day. Can you do outstanding things or go towards outstanding things? So that's the attitude that we must pick up. That energy and enthusiasm to pursue anything, no matter what the outcome. Just joy of doing it. Joy the vivre of doing it in something. That interests you, not for others' sake, not for impressing anybody, not for fame, but just the pleasure of doing things, the joy of doing things. If you can develop that, then no problem in the world can stop you. You can enjoy any problem that happens. Whether it's COVID, you can deal with it. Because solving the problem itself is so joyful. Attempting to do that is joyful. That's all that you need to do.
Ever since I met you, you have been an inspiration, and like me, I'm sure you've inspired a lot more people. So completely honored to have had you on You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Stay blessed, sir, and continue inspiring.
Thank you. And I have learned one lesson from this, and that is the art of patience. You waited years, even though we live in the same city, for me to get back to you and accept a conversation like this. I wish I have your patience. I'll try. I will not just wish. I'll try and build that patience into my life.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I'm so honored.
Thank you.
With that, we come to the end of this weekly quest of You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Do let us know if you know people who make the world beautiful. Write in
to rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. That is rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. Come, let's explore this amazing world together, both you and I.